or 1-800-HARDWOOD.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, coming up today, we're going to hear Florida This Week, which is a panel discussion about state and local politics. Among the topics, last week's big debate among the four Democrats running for governor next year. As we listen back to Florida This Week, you can always comment. Here's how to do it. Just send a comment to this email address, dj@wmnf.org. We'll hear Florida This Week, and then later on in the program, we'll open up the phone line, so stick around. Coming up next, the Democratic candidates for governor hold their first debate. The Constitution Revision Commission finalizes its work on proposed amendments to be on the ballot this November, but not without controversy. More activism generated out of the Parkland massacre, and time is running out for Puerto Rican hurricane refugees. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
WEDU Studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lurie.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Paula Dockery is a former state legislator and a columnist and is currently not affiliated with any political party. Stanley Gray is a civic activist and a Republican. Ernest Hooper is a columnist for the Tampa Bay Times and the host of That's All I'm Saying here on WEDU. And Rita Ferrandino is the founder and CEO of ARC Capital and a Democrat from Sarasota. Well, thank you for coming. Great to see you. The four Democratic candidates for governor held their first debate this week in Tampa on Channel 13. It was largely a polite exchange on everything from Syria to assault weapons to civics education. At one point, former Congresswoman Gwen Graham was criticized for taking money from Big Sugar. She then pointed out that the other three candidates, all men, seemed to be ganging up on her.
Oh, I seem to be the one. It's okay. Gwen and the men. I am committed to doing what's right for water quality. And the bill that that Chris refers to was about regulations that we needed to understand what was being expected.
Well, it isn't just about the men against the women. The records do matter. And in this case, the Congresswoman also voted for the Keystone Pipeline, which obviously can pose a sizable threat to groundwater.
That was perhaps the tensest moment during the debate. On many other issues, there was agreement. To a question about what kind of weapons Florida should consider banning, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum said this.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, any gun that can fire off 45 rounds of artillery in less than 60 seconds and snuff out the lives of 20 kids or 49 adults or 17 individuals is a gun that I believe is a weapon of war and does not belong on our city streets.
Businessman Chris King from the Orlando area agreed with his fellow candidate that more money needs to be spent by Tallahassee on education.
I would say we need to spend the amount of money it takes to honor our commitment to our public schools. 90% of our students in Florida are in public schools in public education. 90% of the conversation in Tallahassee has been about everything but public schools. I want to be a champion for public schools.
Former Miami Mayor Phil Levine summed up his record as mayor.
Forget about what people tell you. Look at what they've done. I've raised the minimum living wage in Miami Beach. I decriminalized marijuana. I fought climate change and got the highest medal from the president of France. I reformed a police department. I banned plastic bags. I actually did all these things and more. So every single thing I said I was going to do when I became mayor, I did it.
Graham had this answer when asked what she would do to increase wages for Floridians.
So we must raise the minimum wage. We must provide paid sick leave, and we must provide more opportunities in the state of Florida for those good-paying jobs. And that's about technical training.
Graham was the only candidate who thought public money should be used for professional sports stadiums.
So we've been using Enterprise Florida, Visit Florida dollars for other reasons. Let's use them to keep our sports teams here.
So last time I looked, the state of Florida doesn't own the Rays, doesn't own the Dolphins, doesn't own the Marlins. So absolutely not. We're not going to invest in someone else's business. I wish them all the luck. I really hope they stay here.
So, Rita, was there any clear winner at that debate?
I think there wasn't a clear winner. I think the Democratic Party is really proud to have four really highly qualified candidates running. And I think that, those candidates are out trying to differentiate themselves to the Democratic voting population.
How did you think they did, points-wise, in terms of the debating skills, their knowledge of facts and all that? Do you think?
Well, I think one of the great parts about a primary and doing debates at this point is you're getting ready and setting yourself up for the general. And I think that was probably the best part that came out of this, is that the candidates are defining who they are, they're getting comfortable in that kind of setting. And the fact is, Democrats are pretty focused on winning in November.
Ernest, do you think anybody said anything there that's going to cause them trouble down the road?
No, I don't think you had that uh-oh moment that we've seen in presidential debates and other debates. But I think there is some clear delineation between the candidates. And what we're looking at is progressives favoring Gillum and maybe Levine a little bit. And then your more moderate, Gillum and King, and then your more moderate Democrats splitting between Graham and Levine.
But you think Levine is more moderate than he is progressive?
I think so. I think when you look at some of the people who are supporting Levine publicly and privately, I've heard some Republicans say, you know, if Levine ended up being governor, I'd be okay with that. And to me, that's an indication that he's seen as more of a businessman and more of a moderate.
And the polling is pretty, there's big gaps we're seeing in the polling. And the fact of the matter is that Gillum and King are really in the single digits, where we've got really Phil Levine is starting to pull ahead pretty strong. And, you know, 4 months ago, this was Gwen Graham's to lose. So that's sort of the interesting jockeying.
Well, but Levine also can self-fund and put a lot of money into television ads, which nobody else on the Democratic ticket has, in the Democratic primary has.
And he's been doing that big time.
And at this point, it's more name recognition than anything else. But I would say this as a NPA. I think the Dems really need to hone their message. This is a great opportunity for them this year, and they need to have a good, succinct message and kind of address what Floridians are looking at. And they could compare what they want to do, their vision for Florida, against what Rick Scott did do, and show where they're going to make it better, make a difference. So not that many people saw this debate, but it is a good time for practice. But all four of them need to hone their message.
Do you have any advice? How should they hone it? I mean, because this debate covered a lot of topics. It covers wages and the environment and education, guns.
So,
what should they concentrate on?
So for instance, of course, I like the criminal justice issues and I like the environmental issues. So on those two in particular, point out what the Scott administration did and how you're going to undo it or how you're going to change it. Mm-hmm. Our record on criminal justice has been dismal over the last 8 years. We've had so many suspicious deaths in prison. We've had people in prison for driving on a suspended driver's license. So there's a lot we can be doing. Our prison system is not run well. And then on the environment, the voters of the state of Florida, by an overwhelming number, 70-something percent, said we want you to spend X amount of money on buying land and managing land. For the 8 years under Scott, they haven't spent that.
And there was only one question about the environment during that hour-long debate. Stanley, do you think there was anything there that the Republicans could jump on to say, aha, this candidate is out of the mainstream, and this is where we're going to attack this candidate on?
I think if you said something like that, you would truly be speculating. I thought that the comment that got kind of my attention from the very beginning is when she said men and Gwen. Whereas Ernest said that that's not an aha moment, I think that is an aha moment. I think that's a needless defensiveness. As far as the Democrats, I think what they need to do is figure out a way to establish what they are about, and they need to be able to succinctly share it and discuss it. And I don't think that they did that right now. The little that I gleaned from the conversations or the debate, it was just almost too clean.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rita, that is true. I mean, Democrats don't have a message as short and pithy as the Republicans' message, which says less government, less taxes. I mean, if you could boil down the Republican message of that, how would... how would you add to what Paula said, and that is there one unifying message that all Democrats could get around and could get them, propel them to win in the general?
Well, I think that's the exact purpose of what this debate was about, and that's what the candidates are, you know, that's their job, is to define what it is they're going to tell the world that they're doing and to point out. I also want to, Paul had a really great point, and that is, you know, a lot of, we have four great candidates running for governor, and to date, we don't have anybody on the Democratic side running for AG or...
You have someone for AG, you don't have anyone for Ag and Consumer Services.
Right. So, Sean Shaw for AG.
So will we see anybody move over is the question. Because they have
to. Think one of these candidates could move
over? We have till June for somebody to slide into one of those spots. When we have four great candidates in a year where we're expecting a blue wave, I'd like us to see if we can get some of our constitutional officers be Democrats as well.
Well, Ernest, do you think that they're all ready for prime time? As you watch this debate, could any four of them stand up on stage with Adam Putnam or Richard Corcoran
Ron DeSantis? I think they can stand up on stage and hold themselves, account for themselves fine. The question is, how are they in the room? And how are they in terms of going out and galvanizing the public at different meetings, at smaller meetings? And from what I've gathered, Gillum is the best at that, even though he hasn't raised a lot of money, even though he may not have the name recognition that Levine has. He's considered the best speaker and the guy that is really exciting progressives. And in my opinion, that's what the Democrats need if they expect to take back the governor's mansion. They have to get huge turnout in Dade, in Palm Beach, and Broward, in those Democratic enclaves.
And the I-4 corridor.
And for me, for 20 years, the Democrats seem to have gone with a moderate in the hopes that they could pull votes out of the panhandle. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Whoever the Republicans are going to have, they're going to get the lion's share out of the panhandle. You got to excite people and get turnout at record numbers. That's how President Obama won Florida twice.
Well, do you agree? I mean, do you think that the Democrats could pick the most progressive candidate and then just, you know, use the I-4 corridor and Southeast Florida as the path to victory?
Well, I think that the special election that we saw in Sarasota shows that the landscape is changing a little bit. Nobody counted on a Sarasota seat going blue. So maybe the map is changing a little bit. But I don't think you can go too progressive and win statewide. So it has to be somebody maybe center left.
Okay. And Margaret Good, who won, was very solid in the center, came with great credentials, attorney. She was not an extremist. She was not an extremist.
Well, it comes down to personality and likability and strength of message and how you deliver it. So maybe instead of focusing on the ideology, we ought to think more about who do people feel attracted to? Who do people think, I want that person, I want to be in that person's corner?
Okay. Well, the Florida Constitution Revision Commission, which meets only once every 20 years, has placed 8 proposed constitutional amendments on the November ballot. They will join 5 others placed on the ballot by the legislature or by citizen initiative. The CRC has tremendous power. It's able to bypass any review of the amendment language from the state Supreme Court. So this year, it did something that would never pass muster by the court, which requires amendments to address only a single topic. Most of the CRC's final proposals have several ideas grouped together into single amendments. One amendment would ban both offshore oil drilling, as well as outlaw electronic vaping in public places. Another bundles term limits for school board members with civic literacy and charter school oversight. And one amendment ties a change in the date of the annual legislative session to forcing Miami-Dade to elect its sheriff. Several CRC members tried to stop the grouping of proposals, but they were unsuccessful. One standalone proposal put forth by the commission would ban greyhound racing here in Florida. All the proposed amendments must be approved by 60% of Florida voters to take effect. Paula, I imagine that a lot of voters are going to walk into that voting booth in November and look at these complicated amendments and throw up their hands and say no. What do you think?
Yeah, that could be, or there could be some voters that go straight yes down the ticket or straight no down the ticket, and they won't even know the difference in the amendments in terms of how they got on the ballot. I think it is profoundly unfair for any group to be able to put an issue directly on the ballot without being looked at by the Supreme Court to make sure that it's not confusing and to make sure that it meets the single subject rule. Putting a popular part of an amendment with a very unpopular part to try and give a better chance for your, you know, bad policy to get through is the height of cynicism and what voters hate. And I think we need to, I don't think on the ballot it's going to say these were on by Citizens Initiative, these were on by legislature, and these were on by CRC. But I think there's going to be a concerted effort to educate voters as to what the CRC amendments do, which ones they are, and to just vote them all down. In the past, I've told people, if you don't know what amendment does, if you are unsure of the unintended consequences, leave it blank or vote no, because then you're leaving the constitutional language as it is now. But this time I would like them to vote no, because I think we need to send a strong message to the Constitutional Commission, revision commissions, that they can't just use a process that's so patently undemocratic.
Well, does that mean that this entire process was a waste of time?
I think it was a waste of time. Yeah. You know, you're amending the Constitution. These should be big issues. These should be things that need to be changed in the Constitution. They're loading on things that could be done by the legislature, and most of these people were appointed by either the Republican governor, the Republican Senate president, or the Republican Speaker of the House. Some of them were legislators themselves. That can be done through law. Then you can undo it through law. Anything that gets changed in the Constitution has to be undone by another amendment going on the ballot for the voters to vote to change. So don't put things in the Constitution that don't belong there, that don't have to do with basic rights. For instance, one that was put on by the citizens is Amendment 4, and it has to do with restoring voting rights to mm-hmm. those who have completed their sentence. That needs to be in the Constitution, and that's one that I would encourage people to vote for.
Vaping, for instance, that could be done by the legislature.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what the voters do in November. Well, on Friday, the 19th anniversary of the Columbine Massacre in Colorado, students in Florida and across the country walked out of their classrooms to protest the lack of action on gun violence. Politicians have taken some small steps to reduce the danger, but students say it's not enough. One of those steps was to require an armed security person to be stationed in every one of Florida's K-12 schools. That's put budget pressure on many school districts. For instance, the mandate is causing a $3.1 million deficit in Sarasota County's school budget. Other communities want to do more to regulate guns. Orlando City Council voted this week to join a lawsuit against Governor Rick Scott and other Florida officials, challenging a 2011 state law that punishes local leaders for enacting local firearms regulations. The class action lawsuit seeks to declare that state law unconstitutional. St. Petersburg's Mayor Rick Kreisman announced last week his city would also join the lawsuit. So, Stanley, has the state of Florida done enough to combat gun violence?
Well, I don't think so. And the reason why I say that is just today we had another instance of that. I think we're kind of at a real interesting juncture in the road. And maybe some of my feelings are colored by the fact that I lived in Colorado when they had the Columbine shooting. I had a college classmate whose son was at that school. I think that the actions that are occurring now by the students are really going to bring to mind the issue to everybody. And that information alone is going to actually, if they keep it up in a very prolonged, sustained manner, I think that we will get appropriate actions. Right now, my greatest fears is that they don't do that, and it will, as history has shown before, become like a past memory.
Stanley, you're a Marine. You're never an ex-Marine. You're always a Marine, right?
Yes, sir.
You know what an AR-15 or the equivalent can do to a human being. Is there a reason that
my personal belief and feelings are, I would not like to see any automatic or any semi-automatic weapons. I just don't think that there's a need for them. If you are going to have them, they need to be at a firing range. I mean, I've seen like what an Uzi and Ingram Mark V, I've seen all that. And I just don't believe that it has a purpose. At the same time, I say that as a person who owns a weapon and I have a concealed permit. I just don't believe that we need to have weapons that could be used like that. I just don't.
Curtis, you think we've done enough, and you think that the especially the students that walked out on Friday, is that is that movement going to grow as we get closer to November?
Well, I think it's already significant. The question is not, is it going to grow? The question is, can it sustain itself through November? And they need a victory in November. They need to see, if not a couple of big names, then maybe a change in who controls the legislature, who controls the governor's mansion. If they don't see that kind of sizable victory, they will feel like their efforts have gone for naught. And they hold the cards. They have to get out and vote. And the data that we've reported on indicates that they're not going to get out and vote in a number large enough to tilt elections in the favor of the Democratic Party, which is seen as being more friendly towards gun control laws.
Yeah, the Times has done that reporting. I noticed, though, in that Times report that in some communities, especially communities that have lots of college students, there is a spike in young people signing up to vote. The question is, Rita, will they vote in November? Because young people typically don't vote.
Yeah, well, I was in D.C. for the big March on Life, and I was shocked, inspired, awestruck, because that rally was for, and it was the kids. They were in buses. They were, you know, the older people, parents and whatnot. We all were told by those students at the rally, take a step back. This is our rally. They owned it. And it was a very nonpartisan kind of event. And they really have identified the NRA with death. They've got their chance, you know, against the NRA. And the thing that I was really moved by is that these kids are keeping score and paying a lot of attention, and they're bright and they're articulate. Sarasota, last Sunday, there was a big rally there, just happened. You know, new college students and high school students got together. Before you knew it, there was 200 people at the square, and they're rallying. So I'm hopeful, and I want to be supportive.
All right. Well, the problems caused by the summer hurricanes continue to put pressure on state and federal resources.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency is set to end housing subsidies for hundreds of refugees from Puerto Rico now living in Florida. The governor of Puerto Rico sent a letter to FEMA seeking an extension through the end of June so children could finish school before returning to the island. If something is not done, more than 1,800 people who have lived here in Florida in hotel rooms since they left the hurricane-ravaged island could be kicked out this weekend.
Now, on Friday, as we were taping the show, FEMA extended the deadline for Puerto Rican refugees to stay in Florida through at least May 14th. Okay, so Ernest, it's not the end of June, it's not the end of the school year, but they did extend it a little bit.
They did extend it, and I'm sure Governor Scott is lobbying the Trump administration to get another extension. I think this is potentially a huge problem for Governor Scott. He's going to be seen as the bad guy by proxy because of his close affiliation with President Trump if FEMA doesn't do more to help the people who've evacuated because of Hurricane Maria. There is an undetermined number of how many are actually here. I've seen numbers as high as 300,000, as low as 50,000. But it's a sizable group, and they're trapped. They've lost their homes on the island, and some are being told, well, if you want FEMA assistance, you have to go back to the island. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, we have nothing to go back to. Can you help us here in Florida?
And they are Americans.
And they,
right.
And
they are Americans.
They are Americans.
So, Paula, do you expect the issue of the handling of the federal government and the state government on the Puerto Rican crisis and the overall hurricane crisis, both here in Florida, Puerto Rico, and also in Houston, in Texas, do you expect this to reverberate in the November election?
I'm not sure it's going to be as big an issue as it should be, but it is shameful how the Puerto Rican, the hurricane affecting Puerto Rico was treated nationally. Rick Scott, to his credit, did better than the national government did, but FEMA has, through the years, been very good at responding, and this was just a disaster. They still don't have electricity up. The last week, they had a total blackout. You know, we're living in a technological age where we should be able to fix the electricity on a fairly small island like that, And instead, we talk about human rights in other countries. How about our own country? Mm-hmm. And why aren't we doing more for these people and to restore a level of living that can sustain them? This is just crazy. And to even give the extension today, when some were already being kicked out of the hotel rooms, is their timing is even showing a disregard for respect of humans.
All right. Well, before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? Stanley, let's start with you. Your other big story.
Well, to me, I hear in Tampa that we're doing a lot of building and everything, but I don't see the prosperity being shared. As you know, that I'm interested in revamping or reinitiating the Urban League. And one of the real missions of the Urban League is to bring economic prosperity or equity to the African-American and the minorities communities. I really do not believe that we're addressing this issue. I'm seeing that the growth of the prosperity is just going to certain sectors. And I don't think that that's a healthy thing.
All right, Rita, your other big story.
Students around the country walked out again today. We had another shooting in Florida here. It is just, we've got to keep our eye on gun control, and we've got to watch what these students are. They're holding us accountable.
All right, Ernest, your other big story.
Mayor, Police Chief Jane Castor announced that she's running for mayor in Tampa this week, and it's going to be really interesting as we focus our attention on the 2018 elections, and then people have to shift gears very quickly and figure out what's happening with the mayoral race. And even though some see Chief Castor as a favorite, there are no clear favorites, and it's going to be one of the most intriguing races we've seen for mayor in Tampa in recent memory.
Huge field. Curtis, also your next TV show here on WEDU is all about the Puerto Rican refugee crisis.
Yes, yeah. It'll be airing on May 8th at 8:30 p.m. That's Thursday, May 8th, and we have a dynamic panel to talk about that situation, so I hope people tune in.
All right, I can't wait to see it. All right, and Paula, your other big story.
The 15th congressional district race just got a lot more exciting and interesting. Popular Congressman Dennis Ross announced that he wasn't going to run, but he just announced that recently. We're getting very close to the federal deadline to get in. You now have some Republicans jumping in the race. There were already four Democrats. There's one Democrat in particular who could give the Republicans a run for their money. He's a young guy, served in the Navy, just got back from a tour of duty. His name is Andrew Lernard. Then you have possibly Tom Lee getting in the race. You have former county commissioner from Polk County and then state representative Neil Cumbie getting in the race. You may have primary on the Republican side. It may become a Hillsborough versus Polk seat, so anything can happen. And I will just say this. Polk County has 580,000 residents. They could have their own congressional seat. They may lose their only representation because in redistricting, we gave it half to Hillsborough and half to Polk County.
All right, that's going to be an interesting race. Thank you all for a wonderful show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week. That was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. And my guests were Stanley Gray. He was the Republican on the panel. Rita Ferrandino was the Democrat on the panel. Paula Dockery was a former state senator, and she is currently affiliated with no political party. And Ernest Hooper was the sole journalist on that panel. Ernest writing for the Tampa Bay Times. If you want to comment about anything you've heard so far, you can email the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. John writes this regarding the Constitution Revision Commission. He says, the CRC is out of hand. It's absurd that they don't have to follow the same rules and proposing amendments that must be followed by citizen initiative. How does the state of Florida have the authority to dictate how Miami-Dade chooses its sheriff? What happens if the vast majority of Floridians identify these mixed-use amendments and simply ignore them? If over half the voters don't vote on those amendments, do they pass? If 60% of the voters do vote in favor? Well, they do, John. And can we send a message to the CRC by ignoring the amendments, or do we have to vote no? The strongest way to say you disagree with the CRC is to vote no on all of their amendments. But that's your choice, whatever you want to do. There's going to be, I think, 13 amendments on the ballot this year. Five were put on by the legislature or citizen initiative, and the others were put on by the Constitution Revision Commission. We're going to take some phone calls in a moment. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. We can talk about these issues, including the governor's race that we've been talking about for the last 25 minutes. I'm going to mention a few other stories that we might consider talking about, and let's see where you want to take the conversation. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. These stories from the Associated Press. Americans overwhelmingly believe teachers do not make enough money, and half say they would support paying higher taxes to give them a raise. That's according to a new Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs research poll that comes amid recent teacher strikes over low pay and the amount of money allocated to public schools in several Republican-led states. Overall, 78% of Americans think public school teachers are not paid enough. Just 6% think they're paid too much, according to that new poll. President Trump's nominee for Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is facing serious opposition before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The panel may not have enough votes to recommend him for confirmation today, as all the Democrats on that committee and at least one Republican have said that they will oppose him. The U.S. Supreme Court so far has had little to say about Donald Trump's time as president, even as the nation has moved from one Trump controversy to another. Well, that's about to change. The justices' first deep dive into a Trump administration policy comes in a dispute over the third and latest version of the administration's ban on travel from some countries that have majority Muslim populations. Opponents of the policy in some lower courts have labeled it a Muslim ban, harking back to Trump's campaign call to keep Muslims from entering the country. The high-stakes arguments at the high court this Wednesday could offer some indication about how a court that runs on respect for tradition and precedent will deal with a president who regularly breaks with convention. The lynchings that killed thousands of people and terrorized generations of African Americans in the U.S. are solemnly commemorated at a new memorial in Alabama's capital city. The National Memorial for Peace and Justice is a project of the nonprofit Equal Justice Initiative. That's a legal advocacy group in Montgomery, Alabama. The organization says the combined museum and memorial will be the nation's first site to document racial inequality in America from slavery through Jim Crow to the issues of today. The executive director of the museum says people in the South don't talk about slavery and don't have monuments that confront the legacy of lynching. He adds that without confronting the difficulties of segregation, we're still burdened by that history. Well, Florida's Republican governor, Rick Scott, is making his fifth trip today to Puerto Rico since Hurricane Maria devastated the island. Scott will leave today on a trip that his office says will be to give assistance and guidance to emergency management workers and government leaders in the U.S. territory. Trip comes less than 2 weeks after Scott announced he'll run for the U.S. Senate. The Puerto Rican vote could be a key in the Florida election. Florida has a large Puerto Rican population that was here before Hurricane Maria, and thousands since then have relocated to the state since the storm hit the island in September. Largo authorities went to a funeral home and used a dead man's finger to try to unlock his cell phone as part of their investigation. 30-year-old Linus Phillip was killed by a Largo police officer last month after authorities say he tried to drive away before an officer could search him. At the funeral home, two detectives held the man's hands up to the phone's fingerprint sensor but could not unlock it. Phillip's fiance says she felt violated and disrespected. Legal experts mostly agree that what the detectives did was legal, but they question whether it was appropriate. Charles Rose, a professor at Stetson University College of Law, tells the Tampa Bay Times that dead people cannot assert their Fourth Amendment protections because you can't own property when you're dead, but those rights could apply to whomever inherits that property. A gunman who carried a shotgun in a guitar case and opened fire at a Florida high school has been denied bond during his first court appearance. A handcuffed person named Sky Booch appeared Saturday before a judge at the Marion County Jail. The Ocala Star Banner reports a second court date was set for next month. Booch, the suspect, told the newspaper that he felt an adrenaline rush before Friday's shooting that quickly wore off and he was unable to continue with his plan. Booch faces charges including terrorism, aggravated assault with a firearm, and possession of a firearm on school property. The shooting at Forest High School in Ocala happened on the same day that the National Classroom Walkout to protest gun violence was taking place. That shooting in Ocala left one person injured. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663, our email address, dj@wmnf.org. And police are warning residents of a Nashville neighborhood to watch out for that suspect in the Waffle House restaurant shooting that killed four people over the weekend. Authorities say more than 80 Nashville police officers are continuing to search for the suspect, Travis Ranking, today. Police say Ranking was nearly naked and brandishing an assault rifle when he opened fire in the parking lot and then stormed the Waffle House restaurant. Four people were killed, four others were injured, and there's a hero in there, a man who fought Ranking and took the gun away from him and threw it over the counter. That man is described as a hero today by many people. Well, again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Nashville's mayor is saying that that shooting over the weekend is a good argument for gun control. So we're going to open up the phone lines right now, see what's on your mind. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. You can also email into the studio, dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Daryl, who's in Tampa. Daryl, what's on your mind today?
Oh, I just want to be briefly just say something. I heard your panelists on the other show mentioned something about the Urban League. I think the better question should be asked instead of wanting a resurgence of the Urban League. Why did it go away on the first hand? Wasn't it because of mismanagement of funds and that they wanted to purchase one of the old cigar factories, which was very expensive, and they wanted to use as their headquarters, and it really took them into a funk. That's the problem, mismanagement of funds. And I just want to also briefly state the gentleman in Tennessee, they said that he used the AR-15 gun. Here we go again, AR-15. He wasn't out there trying to hunt animals, except, I guess, human animals. And once again, it makes people like Dana Lash look very, and the NRA, very foolish. Very foolish.
Well, it looks like this man, this 29-year-old man who shot up the Waffle House, obtained his guns legally. And after he was arrested trying to enter the White House, saying that he was a sovereign citizen,
right,
and had the right to inspect the White House property, the Secret Service arrested him, took away his guns, and then returned them because apparently he had the guns legally, and the Secret Service returned the guns to his father.
And his father gave them back.
Father gave them back, yeah.
Yeah.
It goes to two issues. One is, the guy obtained the guns legally, and two is he's a sovereign citizen. So when we fear gun violence, who do we have to fear? Do we have to fear criminals, or do we have to fear people who are...
Yeah, the irresponsibility of people who gave him those weapons back, and he should have been diagnosed. And yes, there's somebody right there with a mental problem.
Well, he would say he has the right to have that conservative philosophy. The sovereign citizens really believe in almost no government.
Not at the expense of your safety and
my safety. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what he believes. I mean, you know, certainly I understand you would disagree with that.
Thank you, Rob.
All right, Daryl, thanks a lot. And Daryl mentioned the Urban League. The Urban League did close here in Tampa. They had financial difficulty. They had moved to a new location. And my guest on that show, Stanley Gray, says that I think it's okay that I share this with you, that he wants to revive the Sierra Club and bring it back in Tampa. So we'll see where that goes. 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. 352 writes, what kind of gun control would have worked on this guy, Rob? His guns were already taken away and then his father gave them back. I guess my question is, why does anybody need an AR-15? Does anybody really need an AR-15 to do something positive for society? That's what I would say. And I think we've got to have that discussion. We have really not had that discussion. What do you think? You know, this 29-year-old goes in to shoot up an a Waffle House with his AR-15 and kills several people. He has already been on the radar of law enforcement because he tried to go to the White House a while back, claiming he was a sovereign citizen and said he had the right to inspect the White House because he was a sovereign citizen. I mean, are these the people that we should fear? Sovereign citizens with AR-15s? I mean, that could be a start. What do you think? 813-239-9663. I mean, maybe people who pose a danger could be profiled. And would that be a profile that you would say, yeah, that person probably should be heavily scrutinized by law enforcement and his gun should not be returned to him? What do you think? And what do you think about the father that returned the guns to him? I mean, the Secret Service couldn't be in a bubble and think that the father was not tempted to give the guns back. I mean, should the Secret Service be held accountable? Should the father be held accountable? Should the sellers of the AR-15 be held accountable? Should the manufacturers of the AR-15 be held accountable? What do you think? 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I thought that poll about Americans overwhelmingly believe teachers don't make enough money and half said that they'd support paying higher taxes to give teachers a raise, according to the new AP poll. 78% of Americans think public school teachers are not paid enough. Just 6% think they're paid too much. Parents and those without children are about equally likely to think teachers are paid too little, and the sentiment crosses party lines too, according to the poll. Slightly more than half of Americans approve of teachers striking to get higher pay, and about half would support a plan to raise taxes to get teachers a pay increase. For years and years, state budgets, especially states that are controlled by Republican governors and Republican legislatures, such as Florida, have been cutting taxes, and where that ends up going is that there's less and less money available for public schools. Florida peaked in per capita school funding way back under Governor Charlie Crist. It was 2007, just before the recession kicked in, and really that funding's not been restored. 813-239-9663. Let's go to a guy who I think supports sovereign citizens, Nick in St. Pete. Hey, Nick, you're on. What do you think about what happened in Nashville?
I don't know anything about it. You had asked why and what the reasoning was for anyone to have an AR-15.
Yeah.
Yeah, the why is not for hunting. The why is to overthrow tyranny. That's the reason as well.
So, Nick, you want to overthrow our government?
No.
Okay. Well, why? What don't you like about our current government?
I'm talking about the right of the people should not be infringed to be able to overthrow tyranny.
Well, no, you left out the part about a well-regulated militia. Why did you leave that part out?
We can do that if we need to.
Well, I mean, are you, Nick, do you own guns?
Do you?
No, I don't. Do you?
For you. Do you feel
all right.
safe?
Nick, do you own guns?
Do you feel safe?
Nick, do you go? I feel very safe. Nick, do you own guns? Do you own guns, Nick? Nick, what militia, what well-regulated militia are you part of since you're a gun owner? And I think you're a fan of sovereign citizens because you call the radio station a lot. And we really have you figured out. So what well-regulated militia do you belong to?
Not really sure what a sovereign citizen is, Rob.
Yeah.
I guess you don't have me figured out.
No, we do.
We don't have guns for hunting.
So you're using it to overthrow the government when you don't like what the government does.
We're using it with the Constitution.
When the
rights of the people shall not be infringed.
No. The Constitution says a well-regulated militia, and you do not belong to a well-regulated militia. I mean, that's it, right? I mean, you are not part of any sort of well-regulated militia. So you, sir, would it be fair to say, are in violation of the U.S. Constitution? Nick? All right, he hung up. Thanks, Nick. 813-23... Nick calls all the time. And basically, well, you've heard Nick. You know what he stands for. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Teresa in St. Pete. Hi, Teresa, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
I would like to say that I am a woman who never had children, didn't want them, but I have no problem paying for the schools, and I think they should raise our taxes so that we do educate our young. I just want to put that out there because I, you know, a lot of people say, I don't have kids, so why should I pay? Well, they're our future, and, you know, I chose not to have kids.
Teresa, do you think that with all the tax cutting that's gone on in Tallahassee over the last 6 years or 7 years, that there's been an ongoing war on public education?
Oh, absolutely. Republicans want to just destroy it. They don't care. And, you know, I mean, I remember, what year was that? Was it 2006 or 7 that Charlie Crist, where we put on the ballot that we could lower our property taxes?
I think we increased the homestead exemption, but I've forgotten the year.
Yeah, and I remember it was something like that, and I voted no. I did not want my homeowners or my property taxes to go down because I knew that they would cut the schools and the police and all the things that we need, our roads, our police, our firefighters, our teachers. That's what the property taxes pay for. And so I voted no. I said, no, do not cut my property tax. But I think it passed, and I think ours went down like $20 a month. And I'm like, seriously, $20 a month? My God. And, yeah, teachers don't get paid enough. I have worked for teachers. And the one finally quit the classroom a couple of years ago, and then she just recently quit the whole school system after 20 years. It's appalling.
Sounds
it's
discouraging.
It's awful.
Yeah. All right, Teresa, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Okay.
All right. And I think there is going to be an amendment on the ballot this year that proposes, I think, reducing expanding rather the local property tax exemption. We'll probably have a lot of discussions about that before we get to November. I don't have the proposed text in front of me, so I'm hesitant to read it or rather talk about it. So let me read some of these emails that have come in. David writes this, sovereign citizens have no place in our society. They remind me of the first Scientologists, stick them on a boat and let them fend for themselves. That's David's opinion. Adam writes this, there are people who can hunt all number of small animals with a bow and arrow. If you need an AR-15 to hunt, then you must really suck at hunting. I like the idea of making ammo expensive if you can't afford to buy tons of bullets. It'll be a lot harder to commit a mass murder. It's too easy to buy high-capacity magazines and hundreds of bullets, writes Adam. And somebody from the Brandon area, Mark in Brandon, says the Waffle House story is horrific. Those guns should be banned, and that father should be arrested, writes Mark. Let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Mike in Bradenton. Hey, Mike, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. I just wanted to say to the gentleman who called in before, saying that he needed the AR-15 to fight against tyranny. I know we've gone over this a bunch of times, but, you know, the U.S. military, we spend more on our military than the next, I don't know, 10 or 12 nations combined. The idea that an individual citizen with a machine gun is going to fight tyranny or a whole group of these citizens is outrageous and ridiculous. And, I mean, you might believe that if you watch too many Charlton Heston or whatever, Charles Bronson movies. But the truth of the matter is, I mean, they have drones, they have helicopters, they have tanks.
You know,
it's a fantasy.
And Mike, that's a perfect point. And the irony of that is people like Nick who call up, who are big gun rights advocates and advocates of other kinds of things, are the kind of people that would vote for the politicians that want a bloated military budget. They want that military big. But then Nick turns around and says, well, you know, we've got to have guns to fight the military. Well, your point is perfect. The military has helicopters and atom bombs and these Warthog aircraft that can slice a body in two in a matter of seconds. I mean, there's no way you could buy enough AR-15s to hold off the amount of equipment we bought for our military.
Yeah, but by the time he knew what was happening, his house would be leveled and there would just be a smoke cloud coming up from it. Yeah. And, you know, what's really ironic is that if they would just remember the whole point of the United States is we can vote the bastards out. So don't fight tyranny with an AR-15. Fight it with your vote.
Exactly. Mark, brilliant. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks.
All right,
thanks. Appreciate
it. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and we're going to go back to the phones. A bunch of emails have come in. We're going to try to get to all of those. Let's go to Karen in Tampa. Hi, Karen, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. I'm glad you started talking about education and guns, because I was reading something in the paper this morning. It was about, you know, all these great kids and, you know, the things that they're involved in. And there was some mention of, I think, a Plant City kid. Anyway, but there was one paragraph that caught my eye, and it mentioned how most of the kids who are kind of the leaders in this thing, like the kids from Parkland, are from more, like, upscale, you know, wealthier neighborhoods with better schools and therefore better education. And I thought, well, yeah, of course. And then, you know, I always think, okay, that, I hate to sound like a crazy conspiracy theorist, but I've been wondering for, like, quite a while, you know, does the government really want public education to be good? I mean, they keep trying to turn it over to the private, to the charter schools. And I'm thinking maybe this is why, because, you know, we always say we need, like, an educated populace, you know, for this democracy. But I think there are a lot of politicians who kind of understand that and don't want it, because if you're educated and you understand your rights and what you can accomplish, that's going to be bad for them. I mean, Trump wouldn't be elected if there weren't a lot of people who had really bad educations and didn't know anything about anything. So, you know, I don't know if I'm crazy, but I just keep thinking, is that what they're really trying to do? Are they really trying to have an uneducated populace?
Well, what do you think? I mean, have you arrived at a conclusion? Do you think that that's what the aim is?
I don't know. What do you think? Am I crazy?
Well, I do think that we underserve our country by not educating our kids to the fullest extent. And I know we're doing that. I know that some kids are being left behind. And partly it's because sometimes classrooms are overcrowded. Sometimes you've got discipline problems in schools and you don't have enough adults to handle the problem. Sometimes kids come into school and they're hungry. They've got problems at home. They act out. You know, we've got to devote, I think, more resources to public schools because there's so many problems at home. Some of those problems caused by personal action, but some of those problems caused by abject poverty. And I think we've got to face up to that unless we don't want to leave low and middle income kids behind. And if we do, it just makes the country worse down the road.
Right, but, I mean, is there a possibility that that's really what they want, you know? It's easier to fool people who are badly educated. I mean, that's clear. So, you know, I have to be a little suspicious. I just have to be.
Yeah, all right. Well, Karen, thanks for raising the question. Let's hope that they're not that bad. Karen, thanks. All right, I hear you. Dave writes this, one unifying thing in the next election will be the question, did you take NRA money in your campaign? That's Dave's email. And Jeff in Newport Richey says, the Constitution does not say the right of a well-regulated militia shall not be infringed. The Constitution says that the right of the people shall not be infringed. Yeah, but it starts off saying, a well-regulated militia being necessary to a free society. That's how it starts off. And so why did they put that in there if they didn't mean that it was attached to the latter part? You can't just throw out half of what the amendment says. You've got to take in the whole amendment. You can't just pick and choose the words of an amendment. They wrote it for a reason. They didn't just put it in there because they liked the sound of it. Let's go to Jill and Tierra Verde. Jill, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say? Hi, Jill. Jill.
What are you doing, sir?
Hi, Jill. You're on. Hi, Jill. All right. I think we've lost her. Jill, I'm sorry about that. Let's go to Alan in Temple Terrace. Alan, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Thank you so much. I'll try to keep focused on a few items. First of all, Mr. Well-Regulated Militia Guy, when the SWAT team people come for his house, that AR-15 is going to be the first thing that gets him killed.
Yep.
And I have never seen, and there's laws against it, a hunter taking a 30-round clip and going shooting a deer with it. You know, letting go. Maybe they should have a few YouTubes or something like that. And you got to understand that these people are in a different universe than you. Why didn't they call this conservative Waffle House killer a terrorist? And then also, it's like I was reading the NRA magazine the other day because I have some redneck cousins in Alabama, and they said, if you're a Democrat, you're a socialist.
Oh, boy. All right, Alan, I'm sorry to say we're out of time, but thanks.
Okay.
Alan, thanks a lot. Great points. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow at 11. This is WMNF in Tampa.